Welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
I didn't want to run Guy McPherson's speech just to titillate our taste for disaster porn. I fact-checked pretty well every statement McPherson made before I was willing to run it. My pages of notes have been condensed into an entry for Radio EcoShock at our blog at ecoshock.info. You can chase the links for yourself and verify what Guy is saying. Guy McPherson referenced a scientific paper in the prestigious journal Climatic Change. The title is On the Coupled Evolution of Inflation, Wealth, and Atmosphere Concentrations of Carbon Dioxide, and that is by Professor Timothy Garrett. In a Radio EcoShock interview on November 19, 2010, Professor Garrett says his research showed only a big economic collapse could save us from the worst of climate change. Here is that clip. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Dr. Timothy Garrett, an atmospheric scientist from the University of Utah. And I'd like to really get to the conclusions of your new paper. Based on our past records of energy use and wealth, what does your model show as possible futures?
Well, in fact, I mean, this was actually stimulated by our past conversation. In my first study, I showed that carbon dioxide emissions and wealth were intrinsically coupled. Without actually decarbonizing the economy, like switching to renewables or nuclear power at an extraordinarily fast rate, you cannot have wealth without having carbon dioxide emissions. The two go together. And in fact, since 1970, the relationship between the two has been very, very tightly fixed. Now, that would seem to have implications for the future because carbon dioxide emissions accumulate in the atmosphere. As carbon dioxide emissions accumulate in the atmosphere, some fraction goes into what we call sinks in the oceans and the land, but about half of what we emit accumulates in the atmosphere. That is going to create an ever-increasing pressure on civilization. Now, by eating away at civilization wealth, global warming will actually reduce our capacity to emit carbon dioxide. So there's actually what you would call in physics a negative feedback. So our wealth is emitting CO2. CO2 accumulates in the atmosphere and then feeds back on our capacity to produce new wealth. Eventually, one could imagine that civilization would enter into a phase of collapse because the carbon dioxide levels are so high that we're simply unable to produce new goods without them being destroyed by global warming. And at that point, perhaps emissions would go down. And eventually, if civilization collapsed fast enough, then perhaps carbon dioxide concentrations would be stabilized. Now, you asked me last time what would be required to keep carbon dioxide concentrations at 450 parts per million. And that's normally what's considered to be about a dangerous level by, let's say, during the Copenhagen Accord. And I made a guess that it would require actually flat-out civilization collapse, and based on some preliminary work I did, and then I decided to look into this a bit more deeply, and I actually wrote a second paper where it turns out that is true. Not only would we have to have civilization collapse starting very, very soon, like within the next decade or so, but we would also have to have extremely rapid decarbonization in order to keep carbon dioxide levels below, let's say, 500 parts per million, twice pre-industrial levels. In order to keep them below 1,000, well, without civilization collapse, let's say we have continuing health, let's say that the civilization is very resilient to global warming, then carbon dioxide levels are going to go extremely high by the end of the century, probably above 1,000 parts per million. You think about 1,000 parts per million, well, that's probably depends on what the climate sensitivity is, but that's something along the lines of 5 degrees Celsius warming at least. And when we think of 5 degrees Celsius warming, people are familiar with this, usually start bringing up highly catastrophic scenarios. So in some sense, it's hard to imagine how civilization cannot be in pretty dire straits during this century.
That was Professor Tim Garrett from the University of Utah appearing on Radio EcoShock in November 2010. In other news, the World Bank has released a new report about climate change. It warns we are heading to a world hotter by 4 degrees Celsius, or 7.2 degrees Fahrenheit, by the year 2100. In fact, as we'll hear in our next interview from the Potsdam Institute in Germany, on our current course of emissions, we might even get that hot by 2060. That would be devastating for humans, for our civilization, and for all the creatures on the planet who have evolved to live in the Holocene era between the great ice ages. In some places, what was a normal summer will become a normal winter. The Mediterranean will be scorched 9 degrees hotter at times, fires and heat waves. Cities by the sea like New York, London, and so many others in Europe, China, and India will be regularly flooded, if not partially abandoned, due to rising seas. Let's begin with the regular Radio EcoShock contributor, Daphne Wysham, this time on Al Jazeera TV, November 30th, 2012, just as the report was released by the World Bank.
The heat must be turned down. A report issued by the World Bank earlier this month warns of severe consequences if global warming isn't dealt with. But isn't the international organization itself contributing to climate change? You're watching Inside Story Americas from Washington. Hello, I'm Shihab Ratansi. Extreme heat waves, declining food stocks, and a life-threatening sea level rise. It's a sobering vision of the future by one of the world's largest and most powerful institutions. The World Bank says that the only way climate change can be dealt with is by, quote, cooperative international actions, end quote. But the financial institution itself is providing billions of dollars for schemes that contribute to global warming. According to the watchdog group, the Bank Information Center, in 2010, its funding for fossil fuel projects hit an all-time high of $6.6 billion. That's a 116% increase from the year before. And most of those loans went towards coal. Here in the studio, we have Daphne Wysham. She is the founder of the Sustainable Energy and Economy Network. Let's begin with the World Bank's report, because clearly no one can say the World Bank doesn't understand the scale of the problem, at least. The report said that the world is headed for an average temperature rise of 4 degrees Celsius by the end of the 21st century, possibly as soon as 2060. It will make summer temperatures higher by as much as 6 degrees Celsius across North Africa, the Mediterranean, the Middle East, and the United States. The report also says rising CO2 levels will lead to a, quote, unparalleled rise in ocean acidity, which would wipe out the world's coral reefs and fish stocks. It also projects that higher temperatures will trigger an extinction crisis amongst some animal species and a 1 meter rise in sea levels by the end of the century. Because, I mean, the evidence has been mounting for some time now about, you know, how disastrous man-made climate change is, and yet, if anything, the World Bank seems to have accelerated the amount of investment in fossil fuels. Here are some examples. In Kosovo, the bank is financing a coal power station which will use brown coal, the most polluting sort. The plant will increase the country's carbon emissions up to 400%. In South Africa, $3.75 billion in World Bank loans are going to Eskom, the largest power utility company in Africa. It's constructing 2 coal-fired power plants with those funds, but has been criticized for failing to consider the impact on air and water quality. I mean, they must know that these coal-fired power stations are potentially disastrous to the planet, and indeed all of their mandate, really, on poverty reduction and, you know, sustainable development. And yet, it goes on.
And yet it goes on, and it's been going on for 20 years. I mean, it was 1992 when the World Bank was asked at the Rio Earth Summit to begin to marshal the funds to address the climate crisis, to help the developing world move away from fossil fuels. And they've done the exact opposite. I mean, you've named some of the top projects. There's also the Tata Mundra project in India that was a huge fiasco and is now being challenged by people in India on the ground, both for its environmental impact as well as for its human rights impact.
But at Rio, were they specifically tasked with switching course, though, and looking into sustainable?
Yes. And that,
but instead they
have failed miserably. And what we documented back in 1997 was that over 5 years, the World Bank had provided finance to fossil fuel projects that would emit the equivalent, over their lifetimes now, of 1 year's worth of global greenhouse gas emissions. That's a huge number. The World Bank challenged our methodology. Dan is talking about them coming out with a methodology to finally assess their climate impact. But we're saying, you know, first of all, methodologies are not rocket science, A. And B, we know what causes climate change. Just stop funding the dirty stuff. There are plenty of private banks out there perfectly capable of funding coal-fired power plants. The bank makes the argument, well, we do it cleaner, we do it better, we assure best practices. All of that is not a justification for using this public money. Well, one of the points I wanted to make is back in 2004, their own review said that the poor were actually worse off as a result of these investments in fossil fuels, that the poor, that the people they are supposed to be serving, providing energy and electricity to, are actually worse off because most of them are being resettled, they're breathing dirtier air, and they're not even getting power, or their rates are going up. So my point is, first, do no harm. Yes, methodologies are important, absolutely. First, do no harm. We are doing more harm than good with these investments. We know what we need to do. We need to do a rapid investment in renewables. We could do a global feed-in tariff for renewable energy.
From these projects, if not
well, we've actually looked into that very closely, and it turns out for basically for every dollar that the U.S. invests in the World Bank, they get back roughly $1.30 in procurement contracts, and that goes for all of the other countries that invest.
That was Daphne Wysham on Inside Story Americas with host Shebab Ratansi, broadcast on Al Jazeera TV November 30th.
Radio EcoShock.
Now it's time to hear from the Potsdam Institute, who wrote that report, Turn Down the Heat. Olivia Maria Sardacni is a research analyst for Professor Schellenhuber and Ramsdorf at the German Advisory Council on Global Change to the federal government there. Olivia was part of a team producing the report Turn Down the Heat, Why a 4-Degree Warmer World Must Be Avoided. That's from the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research. It was released in November 2012, and it was written for the World Bank. Olivia, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you for having me, Dan.
Olivia, how did this report for the World Bank evolve with the Potsdam Institute?
Yes, so when in July this year, President Kim was appointed as World Bank president, he wanted to investigate what climate change, how severe an impact it could be for the development world, so which would have obviously affect his institute's policies. And it was basically only a scoping report they asked us for, to briefly sketch out what would be the consequences of a 4 degrees centigrade warming by the end of the century, which is sort of a best guess of how bad it could get in worst case by the end of the century. So we sat down and got the experts at the Institute together to write a report on impacts in a 4 degrees world. And that was then presented by our director, who was lead author of the study, to the president of the World Bank. And from what they told us, it was a bit like a wake-up call, because they realized just how important and how big a problem it might be also for the development world. And that was when we were commissioned to further map out the impacts of a 4 degrees world and write this report.
And is your director John Schellenhuber?
Yes, that is him.
Well, now, how likely is it that the average Earth temperature will warm by 4 degrees? That's 7.2 degrees Fahrenheit. And how soon could that happen?
Well, ultimately, it will depend on political decisions to curb greenhouse gas emissions or not. But if current pledges are actually put in place and met, there will likely be a warming of more or less 3 degrees centigrade by the end of the century. And even under these current pledges that were agreed upon in Copenhagen and reaffirmed in Cancun, so if these current pledges are met, there's a 20% chance of the world warming by 4 degrees by the end of the century. Now, if these pledges are not met and emissions rise faster than currently with further economic growth, 4 degrees warming could even occur by the 2060s, but that is with lower probability. More or less, however, we did look at the end of the century, so we looked at scenarios 4 degrees warming by the end of the century.
And your report did look at a series of frightening consequences of letting the climate warm that far to 4 degrees centigrade. Can you talk about the possible human health impacts?
Well, I can tell you what we covered in the report. And basically, there is one example that are vector-borne diseases. So these are diseases transmitted, for example, by mosquitoes. And mosquitoes and the spread of them is affected by precipitation and temperature change. So with 4 degrees warming, you have a big change in the regional temperatures and in precipitation. And as that changes, mosquitoes migrate differently and carry malaria to new places. For example, malaria is such a vector-borne disease. So this disease with them would spread further towards areas where there is no immunity yet. And then you have more indirect impacts. For example, when you have increased occurrence of floods, you have waterborne diseases spreading further, diarrheal diseases also due to higher floods and different rainfall patterns. If you have lower agricultural yields in some regions, you might have to cope with under or malnutrition. And then there are, of course, all these projected impacts of extreme events. So already in the past and in the developed world, actually, such impacts were observed in the summer heat wave of 2003, which spread over Europe. There was an excess, total excess deaths at an estimated 77,000 people dying in Europe due to extreme heat events. So with 4 degrees warming, there would be more extreme heat events, and probably if people will not be able to adapt to that, further heat excess deaths as well.
So it's not just the developing world who will be hurt by this. Who will be hurt the most and who the least? Are there winners and losers in this 4-degree warmer world?
Well, I'm not aware of any winners at this very point. Maybe the very, very rich who can adapt very well at national scales, but we didn't look at these scenarios. However, the poor and underdeveloped countries would be disproportionately affected, which is more or less due to two reasons. One is that they have the least adaptive capacity, so the poor have the least means to withstand impacts. And actually, physically, the impacts are projected to also be worse in tropical and subtropical regions where you have many developing countries. So, for example, even sea level rise will not rise, or is projected not to rise uniformly, but is estimated to be 15 to 20% larger in the tropics than in the global mean. So countries there and coastal systems would be affected more there as well. And, for example, temperatures would, so in the tropics you have temperatures high day and night already. So the absolute increase wouldn't be higher than in the higher latitudes, but the relative increase. So ecosystems and people have adapted to temperatures as they are there for a long time. And as they would rise even further, they would be disproportionately affected as well. And the same goes for aridity and drought. These are likely to substantially increase in tropical and subtropical areas, more so than at higher latitudes.
And what about the economy? I wonder whether our current industrial civilization can survive the challenges of a rapid shift to a different climate. Did you look at the economic impact?
Well, no, we do certainly wonder as well. We have looked at a few studies that did investigate the link between rising temperatures and economic growth. And there has been impact observed, for example, for a 1 degree rise in regional temperatures. There was a 1.3% decrease in economic growth. So there are plausible linkages of, for example, how it reduces the labor force, or actually just how capital damages are done to infrastructure. But we did not investigate further what this actually would mean for the global economy.
This is Radio EcoShock. We are talking about the report, Turn Down the Heat, Why a 4-degree Warmer World Must Be Avoided, from the Potsdam Institute. Olivia Sardenci, what would happen to the animals and plants?
Well, I cannot tell you about each animal and plant specifically, but I can tell you that a 4-degree world would be an unprecedented world, not only to human beings, but also to ecosystems that have adapted to the world as we know it now throughout evolution or since the last glacial period. You could term it a sixth mass extinction that would have started to occur by then already. So you would have a few ecosystems that could not migrate any further as temperatures change. For example, so polar bears obviously are the most poignant example, but also mountaintop ecosystems that at some point could not migrate further north to colder temperatures because there would be no mountain anymore. Those would be are projected to become extinct. And the same goes for larger ecosystems like the Amazon forest, for example. So already at a 2 degrees centigrade warming, forest fires in the Amazon are in some studies projected to double, with huge impacts on the animals that live in these ecosystems, of course. So it would be unprecedented impacts on ecosystems that are already under stress from multiple human activities like habitat change. But in a 40-degree world, probably climate change would be the driving factor.
Did your report look at the impact of a 4-degree world on ocean life?
We did look at ocean acidification, which is the other CO2 problem, as it has been called. So as carbon dioxide enters the sea, it dissolves and enters a chemical reaction that ultimately results in ocean acidification. And at a 4 degrees warming, it's basically unlikely that coral reefs would survive at all. So coral reefs are very sensitive to changes in ocean acidity and ocean water temperatures. Coral bleaching, for example, has been linked to ocean temperatures. And already now, corals are experiencing decreased growth rates and damages. So it is quite likely that with atmospheric carbon dioxide concentrations rising further, such that they would result in 2 degrees warming, coral reefs would actually start to dissolve. So this is a major ecosystem impact in the sea, in the oceans, that would result from 4 degrees warming. We did not so much look at the impacts of ocean waters warming on ecosystems, but there are studies as well, and we mentioned a few of them, pointing out that fish stocks would migrate further north, so that would actually also affect coastal fisheries.
Well, I know, Olivia, that some of our listeners are thinking that we'll just adapt to a warmer world using human ingenuity. Isn't that possible?
I wouldn't dare to say it's impossible, but I definitely doubt we actually know the answer. We did sketch out a few impacts of a 4 degrees warming, but it's really just a few pieces of the jigsaw. So we don't actually know the full scale of impacts in a 4 degrees world. I guess it's quite easy to imagine that these impacts would interact. So, for example, if you have changes in water availability, this will affect agricultural yields, and this will affect health, and health in turn will be affected by high temperatures. So it all, you know, coalesces, it all works together. And we don't really know what this net sum of impacts would be. We don't know what the world in a 4 degrees world looks like to which we would adapt. And therefore, I don't think we can know whether we know if we can adapt. You know, if you don't even know the scale of the impact, it's fairly too optimistic from my personal point of view to say we'll just adapt, because it's a world we've never lived in and we don't know how much we can cope with it. Plus, it's, like I said, the poorest that are likely to be affected most, and they have the least means to actually really adapt, no matter how large human ingenuity might be.
Well, speaking of things that we're not very sure about, very few climate assessments try to include positive feedback loops like the emissions from melting permafrost or frozen methane under the shallow seas. Did the Potsdam Institute report for the World Bank include feedback calculations?
So we did not make any feedback calculations ourselves. We did analyze already existing climate data from the CMIP-5 project. So there was the Climate Model Intercomparison Project in its fifth phase. And I have to say, I'm not sure which of these models include any feedback systems. What we did was that we analyzed their data for heat waves. So we looked at their rates of warming and how many heat waves would occur according to these models. But again, I'm not sure they include feedback loops themselves.
Okay, and John Schellenhuber, as you mentioned, is the director of the Potsdam Institute, and at the 4 degrees or More conference in Australia in 2011, Dr. Schellenhuber suggested the climate may not be stable at 4 degrees. It could tilt even further towards 6 or 8 degrees. Can you comment on that?
Well, I unfortunately I wasn't there. I wish I would have been. But I'm sure he was speaking of the tipping points that also relate to the feedback groups you had just mentioned. So, for example, the permafrost in the upper latitudes, if that was to melt, more methane and carbon dioxide would be emitted, leading to further warming. So it's, yes, the more the world would warm towards a 4 degrees warming, the more likely these tipping points could be accelerated, leading to further warming. Also, it is, so in the scenario we looked at, we did not assume that emissions would just stop and warming would just stop there. It's just, you know, from a human point of view also unlikely that once we have reached 4 degrees warming, emissions would immediately stop and warming with a time lag would then as well.
Given these dire predictions in the report 4 degrees turn down the heat, what policy changes could the World Bank or even world governments make to stave off a climate catastrophe?
Well, ultimately, it's the reduction of carbon dioxide emissions or other greenhouse gases that need to be curbed and completely avoided in the further future. So I guess from a development point of view, the goal should be to try the green growth, really, or not try, but do the green growth in developed countries. So, you know, don't have them go down the path that we did and develop on a fossil fuel basis, but rather have the developing countries leapfrog into a world of renewable energies and clean energy and power, which would also have co-benefits on health, by the way. In the developing country, in the developing world, there is reported 1.6 million deaths, I believe, per year due to the burning of fossil fuels in households. So it's actually a fairly unhealthy way to develop in certain respects. So if the developed world helped the developing world to install renewable energies and meet energy poverty from this side, help them develop and economically grow in a green, clean way, if you like, I guess this would be the best scenario from both a climate and a developing perspective.
I want to ask you on a personal level, how did you get swept up into all of this and how do you cope with knowing what we know?
Well, I got swept up in all of this. As I said, I worked for Jan Schellnhuber, the director of the Institute. So when we were commissioned with it, I did it because it was my job, so to speak. And it was rather worrying, I have to say. It was actually the experience of all the scientists who were involved that once you start gathering information that is out there on what could happen in a 4 degrees world, it's a really scary scenario. Because usually, you know, scientists work in their field and they're more or less used to the projections they know. But once you collect all these jigsaw pieces together and a picture starts emerging, it sort of really hits you to then think, well, this might just become real by the end of the century. And, you know, it's still our lifetime. You sort of, you want to suppress it because you want to still live your everyday life and you don't want to get depressed. But it's a very sobering, if not frightening, prospect that even us scientists working on this report gathered throughout writing it.
Very well. From Germany, our guest has been Olivia Maria Sardechny from the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research. You can find a link to the report, 4 Degrees Turn Down the Heat, in my show blog at ecoshock.info. Olivia, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. I know Radio EcoShock has been blaring the bad news about climate for the past many shows, but there is a little good news coming. It turns out there are plenty of inventive people all over the world trying out new solutions. I promise you, before this month is out, you will hear a lot about the ways we can change toward survival. So hang in there. I'm Alex. Please turn your friends on to our broadcast and our website at ecoshock.org. Thank you again for listening this week.